Our criminal justice system was designed to be fair for all, and that fairness should be expected from all parts of that system. Now, does that fairness exist across the board? Let's take incarceration. Most say how that's someone getting what they deserve as they're locked up, but are they deserving of what they get when they're inserted into that part of the system? Our first guest today is here to share the findings of a report on this issue by the New Jersey ACLU. The report is Decarcerating New Jersey, A Transformative Vision of Justice. He is the director of Supreme Court Advocacy for the ACLU-NJ. Alexander Shalom. How are you today, Alex?
I'm doing great, thanks.
And to get a copy of this report for your own eyeballs to read, and I hope you do, because a lot of people, when they hear some of the terminology, roll their eyes, pull back, whatever the case may be. And it is an interesting topic of exploration that the ACLU-NJ does, which you can find at ACLU-NJ.org, and we have that link at our homepage. So just as a baseline for the listener, what is the goal? What do you hope is accomplished with the report Decarcerating New Jersey, a Transformative Vision of Justice?
Well, I think what we want to do is two things. First of all, we want to highlight some of the tremendous successes that New Jersey has had in the last decade or so in reducing our prison population in response to the kind of proliferation of incarceration that had happened in the preceding decade. So the first thing is to highlight the successes. I mean, the second thing is to kind of discuss the remaining challenges and the opportunities for future success.
And want to pour water on any fires that start right off the bat, because we're not talking about the releasing of any of the dangerous and the deadly here.
Well, I mean, I think we all have a common interest in ensuring that we live in safe communities. But we kind of had been fed a myth that more incarceration would lead to more safety. But time and again, that's proven to not be the case. And so what we want to do is kind of right-size our prison system. We want to ensure that people aren't in prison unnecessarily, because when they are, we understand the ways that that leads to breakdowns in our community and ultimately harms public safety.
Alex referred to how, you know, we often talk about here on the show how the things New Jersey is getting wrong and how we always wind up on the bottom of lists that come out. But there are two undeniable facts among the many that Decarcerating New Jersey, a Transformative Vision of Justice presents, and that is how the state's prison population has dropped since 2011 by over 50%. What have been some of the driving forces behind that number?
Yes, so two of the biggest drivers have been our bipartisan bail reform law, signed by Governor Christie, put through by a Democratic legislature, that has been really the gold standard of bail reform in the country. It has led to our jail population at one point getting below a full 50% drop. It's now back up because during COVID times, we've had fewer criminal trials and fewer criminal dispositions. But nonetheless, a significant decrease in the number of people who are held in jail pre-trial unnecessarily. So that's one major driver. And the other was the Public Health Emergency Credits Law, a law which during COVID led to the early release of about 9,000 people from prison, not very early. These were people who were on their way out anyway. They were going to get out that year, and they got out 8 months early. But that's really a fascinating law, both kind of looking backwards and looking forwards. Because looking backwards, it tells us that we were able to release 9,000 people successfully. But looking forward, it also makes us ask the question, which is, if you can release 9,000 people early without seeing increased risks of recidivism, why aren't we exploring opportunities for early release more broadly? Because unnecessary incarceration is both costly and harmful to public safety.
And one of the other truths that the report puts in front of, hopefully, people that will understand it's the warning signs that it gives, and certainly the need for more explanation, is the ethnic identification of the incarcerated. Because if you look at the 2022 census estimate, state population of blacks is around 15.3%, but the percentage of those among the incarcerated population is in excess of 60%, and that's a number that's stayed steady for quite a few years, Alex.
It has, and it, as you said, we like to be on the top of lists, right? We have the best bagels, we have the best pizza, but we have the worst rate of black to white disparity in incarceration in the country. A black person is 12 times as likely to be incarcerated in New Jersey as a white person, actually 12 and a half times. And that is a list that we don't want to be on. We'd like to stick to bagels and pizza.
Exactly. That number, though, is that just cut and dry, something that the fault lies in the system? Or is there a social aspect as well where that's just a matter of you have to include the social surroundings, upbringing, family situations and structure? I mean, is it just that cut and dry one single issue that creates that number, or is it multifaceted?
Well, of course it's multifaceted, and whenever we're looking at trying to fix that number, it can't be solved by a single system actor. It's not that we need to tell police to do something differently, or prosecutors to do something differently, or judges to do something differently, or we need to fix our education system or our healthcare system. We need to do all of those things, right? But just because no single person bears the entire burden of fixing it does not mean that any person is relieved of their obligation to do the most that they can to try to fix it. And so every one of those system actors still should bear the responsibility of trying to do their part to reduce the racial disparities that really do plague our criminal legal system.
Totally. Alexander Sloan from the ACLU-NJ, ACLU-NJ.org is their website. Focusing on their recent report, Decarcerating New Jersey, A Transformative Vision of Justice, and you're listening to Issues and Ideas. Is there a place in any way, shape, or form for mandatory minimums, or is that too big of a weight that's creating the situation that and incarcerations?
Sorry, I think any serious researcher who has looked at mandatory minimums has found them to be ineffectual. You're looking for is trying to drive up the number of incarcerated people. We pay judges a lot of money to judge, to use their discretion. And what mandatory minimums do is they strip judges of that ability and say, we know better, a one-size-fits-all approach, rather than allowing for individualized but yet guided discretion in sentencing. I think there is no place in our system for mandatory minimums. They've proven to increase the number of people who are incarcerated and drive racial disparities. And that's why the Bipartisan Criminal Sentencing and Disposition Commission has recommended getting rid of many mandatory minimums. And it now falls on the legislature and the governor to make those recommendations a reality.
This report, too, is one of those that actually has ideas and solutions. It just doesn't point out problems. One of the ideas, solutions that the ACLU-NJ wants further exploration, expansion of, it's called compassionate release. Talk about what that entails.
So one thing that the United States has realized in the last decade, as we've kind of been dealing with the ramifications of the decades of mass incarceration, is that we incarcerate very many old people in this country, and New Jersey is no exception. And one thing we learn about incarcerating the elderly is that it is both extremely expensive, because it forces prisons to operate like nursing homes, and it is extremely unnecessary, because recidivism rates among old people are extremely low. Crime is a young person's game. So what compassionate release does is it says, let's try to ease some of that burden on the system and release people in there as they kind of are aging, not just aging out, but they're sick, they're infirm, and need care and that could be better given to them in the community without harming public safety. And New Jersey actually has a compassionate release law, but it is extremely onerous to qualify under that law. And it leads to one or two people released per year. And that is simply not a big enough safety valve for the scope of the problem. And so it's not that we need to create a compassionate release scheme. We simply need to make it more efficient. We need to expand it such that more people can take advantage of compassionate release, which simply allows the release of the sick and the infirm when they no longer pose a threat to public safety.
I know this report doesn't specifically address what I'm supposed to, what I'm about to look at here, but I think it leads to the question, does the prison system prepare the prisoners for the release? I think back to, this is going back maybe better than a decade, when Greystone Park used to release patients, they literally would put them on a bus and they would be dropped off on the green in Morristown, for example, left to themselves if they had no family, no safety net of any kind. Does the prison system make the transition user-friendly, I guess we'd say, for the person about to be released?
I think the answer is we've made some significant strides in the last decade or so, and we've gotten much better at starting the reentry process earlier, starting the reentry process upon incarceration rather than, you know, on the eve of release. And there are certainly some community partners that are providing substantial supports for people who are returning to our communities. But the reality is that there remains a lot of work to do, both within the DOC and without the DOC, to ensure that people who return to our communities are put in a position where they can thrive, they can succeed.
It is a very interesting report. That it's a good report, too, because it's one that makes you think, as well as bring you a better understanding of a topic that a lot of people really don't want to think about. But it's important because it's a life we're talking about here and the potential of a life should they be able to qualify for release in a fair, equitable way. The report is Decarcerating New Jersey, A Transformative Vision of Justice. This is part of a series of reports that the ACLU-NJ has been doing, which you can find them all at aclu-nj.org. He is their Director of Supreme Court Advocacy. Alex Shalom, thank you so much for being here today and bringing us this information.
I appreciate your time. Thanks so much.